It's not Garrett's voice today. Normally it's Garrett reading this in. Today it's me. And in the past, when this has happened, folks, it's been me going solo. Or me with Logan. And usually when I'm with Logan, he starts talking about some anime bullshit, and it's just what it is. But this is not that today. Today, we are being graced by royalty. I mean, he's laughing, and he's getting a little red. But he told me before the show that a woman told him he has one of the most, what was the word? Was it sexy? I can't remember what the word was.
She simply told me, Jeff, that she loved my voice and Ooh. Asked me to say anything. And I said, hi, my name is Mitch. She said, oh, sounds so good. I was like, okay. I feel like I'm like old now. Like, you know, 34 has made me feel like I'm just over the hill and pathetic. Like I'll say in a BYU weekly presser, gassing up and try to feel young, but really I'm not young. I feel old. And I'm, so it gave me a little bit of kick in my step. I'm like, maybe this thick boy BYU body has got a little bit extra mileage to get going. So yeah. I'm feeling good today.
So we're graced by Mitch Harper this week, and Mitch Harper, not just Mitch Harper. It's like Mitch Harper got a B12 shot today from some lady at the grocery store, and he's walking around with an extra skip in his step today. This is great. Mitch, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be on with you, Jeff. You know, I love you, man. And I'm always happy to be. So when you text me and I was coming back from the Macy's grocery store in Pleasant Grove doing a tailgate, I got to say, too, the tailgates parties for BYU fans, like, we got to be better. Like tailgating in general at BYU has got to get better. I think it's always going to be limited because of the location. Like, no one wants to be, you know, 2 miles and be next to a Baskin Robbins and a Dutch Bros to get rid of the day before the game. We got to step our tailgating game up. Like, hey, I'm trying to hype y'all up. I got some music playing. Like, let's have some fun. Let's do some rah, rah, rah. Let's get after it. But, you know, you fans are a little bit shy and reserved, but that lady, she was not reserved. She was excited.
No, she was getting out of her box and trying to get you out of your box a little bit too. And I'm grateful because you said one line to her, but now we get a whole episode of all kinds of lines for you. This is the perfect week for you to be here. First and foremost, we gotta get serious a little bit because. Well, I'll get there. I don't host the show. I just talk. I just ramble. Now I got to host to get through an agenda. This is weird. We got to talk about Florida. Hurricane Ian, brutal. Absolutely just like decimating Florida right now. Our guy, Will Turner. I don't know if you work much with Will over at the 24/7 side. He's there, kind of right in the heart of it. He told me yesterday that the map had the dot of the hurricane like directly over his house. So he's right in the go zone. So prayers up for Will and everybody out there. Pretty brutal stuff. But that's not the only sad news. And I don't, now that I'm transitioning, now that I'm here in this transition, it feels like a weird transition. But Coolio is dead. And it feels like of all the days for you to be on the show, I don't think I'd get the respect about Coolio's death from Garrett that I think you're going to be able to provide.
When I saw that breaking news notification about Coolio's passing, I was like, we have to bring this up on GEHB tonight. Because I was like, Julio, I'm thinking of the All That specials with Keenan and Kale. Right. Kale loves orange soda. I was like instantly having flashbacks. I wanted to sit on that orange Nickelodeon couch with Julio, Keenan and Kale. And I'm like, that guy's died. He passed away.
He's
now.
He's gone.
It circles back to we're getting old, Jeff. That's the problem.
That's what I was thinking. Like, pick a Coolio song. So, like, there's three or four that I think everybody knows. Everybody else, Gangster's Paradise. I think most people, they may not know the word Fantastic Voyage, but once you hear the song, you know Fantastic Voyage. If you pick any random Coolio song, really any random Coolio song, and then overlay it on any 90s movie, period. Any of them. Like, it can be anything from, like, I don't know, like, Dude, Where's My Car? To, like, Braveheart. It doesn't matter. Anything in between. You put a Coolio soundtrack over the top of it, and it's like, oh yeah, this makes sense. It's the perfect soundtrack for an entire decade. No, any song he sings.
I felt edgy when I slept over at my uncle's house and he had this huge collection of CDs and I had this CD Walkman that I took from my mom's when I went to the sleepover to my uncle's because I knew I could listen to some edgy music late at night when he was asleep. Yeah. And I'd play it at it. Like, I felt I was edgy listening to some Coolio. Because I mean, obviously as a young kid, I couldn't have that. So, you know, that and not watching the Simpsons and those sort of bands were placed on probably every young BYU fan.
I was going to say, did you grow up in my house? Cause I had those same stupid rules too. And as you look back, I was looking at Coolio songs tonight just to like, remember, there's only like five that even have the explicit label on them. Like what was I being outlawed from?
No, it's now you go to like a BYU football game and the instrumentals to any of these songs are like the definition of explicit. But back in the day, it was like, hey, don't go down to that corner. That's so-and-so is a little bit different. That's the era we lived in, but hey, we're better for it. Now we're here on this podcast, but RIP Coolio. Did we know how he passed? I didn't look into that either.
I saw 59 is all that I saw. And
made me kind of pause and think, how did he pass? And usually I always assume the worst when it's not publicly out there, how they passed. I mean, that's maybe a little bit morbid of me, but
I get it.
I always assume the worst.
Lately, I've been assuming that if there's a celebrity who randomly passes, it's because they had a secret fight with cancer that they just didn't tell anybody about. It feels like all these celebrities are like quietly battling cancer and losing. And that's sad, but like, whatever. I mean, I guess do your thing. So rest in peace, Coolio. Go listen to Gangsta's Paradise tomorrow. I hope they play it in the stadium. Like that feels like that would be the only appropriate tribute.
That would be a nice David Almodova touch. We need the marketing touch of, you know, like, hey, the creatives in this era, like, no, they're not content creators, they're creatives now. Let's get the creative juices flowing and there do a Coolio tribute. You know,
We just did your job for you, David. And I know that 60,000 of the 64,000 people in that stadium won't get it, but we will and you will. So let's make that happen. Mitch, moving into some real stuff. Before we do, I guess I've got to do a quick read here. Did you see the Rock'em socks? Did you see the Cougar Tail socks?
Yes, I love them. They're awesome.
They're dope. So I got my pair. Rock'em socks sent me a pair of each of the Cougar Tail socks this week. I've never had Rock'em socks. But I got my first two pairs. They're every bit as good as Stance socks. And I'm like a Stance snob. They're every bit as good. So high quality. They look dope. It's Cougar Tails. You're not going to find Cougar Tails on a sock. I will say, there's one that has just like one big long Cougar Tail. And I don't know if it's because I got like cankles going on or what it is. But when I put those on, the big Cougar Tail looked a little phallic there on my shin. It got a little bit weird. But it was great. The socks are comfortable. They have a ton of stuff. You go to rockemsocks.com, rockemsocks.com. Use promo code GEHB20 at checkout. We'll get you 20% off. They have more than just sports. They have more than just college football. So check them out, rockemsocks.com, and get your Cougar Tail socks. Mitch, I haven't had a chance to talk to you. You know, for as much as we talk, and we have a text going on like every day for the last, I don't know, decade, I haven't asked you at all about realignment. And Dennis Dobbs dropped, I'm not going to call it a bombshell because it kind of feels like it was like a story just because like his editors were like, hey, update the world on realignment. And he's like, well, nothing's happening. So we'll just write the same story again. And so he wrote it today, but it did publish and it had this like harrowing image of the Pac-12 logo on a football field. And it was like all fractured, like when Bane blows up the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, that's what it looked like, right?
It was the exact thought, the Steelers Heinz Field.
Yeah, yes. that's exactly what it was. And so the title was, I can't remember, like the Pac-12 in danger of eventual collapse or something like that. What do you think is going to happen with all of this nonsense?
I feel that, you know, the Big 12 honestly should just go to Arizona and Arizona State. I don't think that anyone else it adds any more to the pot. And in a 12-team college football playoff era, do we really need a 16-team playoff where still the Big 12 probably gets what, whether it's 12 or 16, at best two teams? And that might not be an annual occurrence. To me, if you want to expand and still take out the Pac-12, just go get the Arizona schools because they add upside and potential. We know the whole song and dance about the football side with those programs, from the basketball side, they do add tremendous value, I think, with Arizona. So that's the two teams to me. I don't think there's any other need to go get Utah or Colorado, because in the 12-team playoff, there's just no need to expand to 16. Mm-hmm. And I still think you can get probably an equal share of TV money per school with a 14-team Big 12 that adds Arizona and Arizona State compared to a 16-team one.
I think so too. Now here's what I think they should do. Now, people don't know this about you and me, Mitch, but we used to write on blogs together, and we were always trying to start blog wars, right? Like, little competition between other blogs was always good. We were always making up these like conspiracies of what the other blog was doing, why they were out to get us. If I put that hat on and I'm Brett Yormark, here's what I want to do. Because I agree with you. The Arizona schools are really the only value add right now. This is what I do. I go and I say, San Diego State, we'll invite you. And I go, Washington State, we'll invite you too. It's going to be a pain in the ass to get to Pullman. It's going to be, it doesn't make any sense, right? Logistically, it makes no sense. But the Pac-10, the Pac-12, now Pac-10, can't be the Pac-9. And if you take San Diego State away, then that was really their only expansion candidate that's not a Power 5 school, right? So go get San Diego State, and then go get Washington State. And then the Arizona schools, like, they're going to come begging the Big 12 to get in. That's my plan. I would just like, it's the, what is the contract about? It's the poison pill contract, right? Like, that's what I think Brett Yormark should do. Go to those two schools that really don't make a ton of sense, may not add a lot of value, but they're going to add value in the sense that the Pac-12 will be dead, and you'll know that it's dead because San Diego State's also gone. That's my plan of attack.
That's a great attack, because I think we often just assume, well, Oregon State, Washington State to the Mountain West. You know that Washington State, if they get this Big 12 invite, they're taking it immediately. Yeah, they're not waiting on these extension and these, they're taking it because it's shoring them up that they're going to be at a minimum the fourth best league in America and probably the third. Yeah. I like that. I think it's cool. I mean, Pullman, that facility, it stadium feels like it's a little bit souped up Logan. Yeah. You know, Utah State, it really does. It just has a Logan vibe, which fine. Washington State, though, has always had some pretty good football over the years. And yeah, San Diego State would be a pain in the neck to deal with. And their scandals right now, I mean, everyone nationally always talks about BYU's got these issues and that issues, but San Diego State right now with the former punt god, that's some real scandal, and their football team's not great in the moment, but I'd like that because it just forces the hands of Arizona and Arizona State, because I think they're the real ones. When Yormark's talking, we want to go west and find alignment in both football and basketball. Those are the two entities to me that seem like they're the ones that would fit the best. And I think they really, their fan bases want to be there too. I don't get the sense that Colorado, their fan base is chomping at the bit to be in the Big 12. I know it feels like Utah at no circumstances wants to be in the same league with BYU again. And I get that. I think the same can be said for BYU fans. They don't want to deal with Utah, but I like that. I think that's an outside the box thinking, because I think we just all get in that line of thought of Washington State, Oregon State to the Mountain West. And that's what that's going to be. But yeah, go take it out right now, because Washington State will take that today.
They would. And so this is what I think the Big 12 has, what the Big 12, and we talk about it on our show a lot, what the Big 12 has going forward. No, they don't have an LA market, right? They don't have a Seattle market. But they got a bunch of teams who give a whole lot of care about football, right? And you look at the SEC, Tuscaloosa is not a great market. It's just a bunch of fans that love football. And I mean, you pick a school in the SEC. They're all kind of that same way, right? Pullman, when Washington State has anything sort of to play for, Pullman shows up. Like, they show out. That place is packed. They haven't been good. But if they can get that lifeline and the rest of the Pac-12 is like scrambling, they might have an advantage over some of those schools in the Pacific Northwest that have had an advantage over them for a while, and their fans care. And I think going forward, the Big 12 needs to find the schools who have fans that care. And that eliminates really half of the Pac-12 and a lot of the ACC. So to me, that's what I would do. It's outside of the box, but it kind of forces everybody's hand a little bit. And then you can move forward.
I love that line of thinking. And, you know, I think too, to your point with the Big 12 fan bases, is that we've seen as well that they are willing to pay and search for games. You know, the Big 12 Plus, ESPN Plus, Big 12 Now, They are seeking that out. They have to pay. They're already turning to streaming, whether it's football and especially in basketball, they're paying. Whereas the Pac-12 network, we already know that that fan base, those fan bases are not willing to dig high and low to get their product. And that's why the Big 12, I think, has a lot more potential. It's not just because BYU's in that league. The Big 12 is hyper-focused on college athletics. And even USC right now in the Pac-12, I know they're going to be going to the Big 10, but that LA market, just they're the fourth show. I mean, it was about, you know, the Lakers media day on Monday. That's all they care about over there. It wasn't about that big win. They had it up in Corvallis where they grinded it out. It was about, oh, LeBron and Patrick Beverly are going to try to make a run at a title. It's like, come on. Like they just don't care about college football in the West Coast. And I do like it from that standpoint. A Pullman is a place that feels like they are focused on college athletics. And I like that about the Big 12. And I think that's why, you know, this league fits the DNA still of BYU sports, where it's a higher ground than BYU has ever been on, yet it still fits the fabric and the culture of BYU that they're still looking to validate themselves on the biggest stages of college athletics. And that's what I love about BYU in the Big 12 conference. And I think it's going to be an incredible partnership. And I think that this is going to be the third best league in college athletics. And that might sound silly, but to me, that's still a pretty good place, a far better place than BYU has ever been. And I think that lends itself to so much potential and excitement for the Cougars.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in a 12 team playoff world, being the third best league is a pretty damn good place to be. Yeah. I mean, that's all there is to it. That's a pretty damn good place to be. Some recruiting news this week, not big recruiting news. Top four for Spencer Fano, Michigan, Oregon, Utah, and BYU. The big story for me with that was that Spencer Fano's got himself a little bit of a mustache. I didn't know Spencer Fano could grow a mustache. We've had him on this show a few times. I've never seen a mustache, and I know for a fact that Logan can't grow a mustache. So it's kind of interesting to see the senior with the senior in high school with a little bit of a, it wasn't thick. I mean, I'm not going to give him the credit and say it was like a full Tom Selleck. It wasn't even Caleb Presley, the barstool guy who does all those interviews. It wasn't even one of those, but it was there and I could see it. So he gets credit for that. What do you make of Spencer Fano? How much have you seen? I don't know how much you even get to follow recruiting anymore in your new KSL world, but have you got a chance to see Spencer Fano play at all this year?
Oh yeah. I mean, I watch with the KSL game night live stuff and, you know, you're hosting the Red Zone and all that. I keep tabs on all these guys still, of course. And Spencer Fano, to me, I think that, you know, when he saw them, I saw the mustache too. And I thought maybe he's already looking like a guy that belongs with along the lines of Clark Barrington and all these BYU offensive linemen. I thought the Outland Trophy was a nice touch too in the edit. But to me, I've always looked at him as kind of like an Oregon guy. I don't know. I just feel like he's like an Oregon duck to me. That's kind of my impression of him, but man, if BYU could get him, I just think that this recruiting class in 2023, is the best on paper class that I've seen since 2010. And I know that 2010 is infamous in BYU recruiting lore because it didn't live up to the top 25 accolades that it received. But the thing is, people don't acknowledge, and you, I'm preaching the choir with you, but it's just like the star system is so much more accurate now, and the depth of it and just the evaluation. Spencer Fano's legit, and he would be a guy that would step in on campus and instantly compete to be a starter. And I think that that's the type of talent he is. And that's what guys at BYU's got to get in the Big 12 conference. And I've already seen the bump with guys like Landon Chambers, who will eventually get that bump, I'm sure. But those are the type of players that BYU has to get. And these are the battles. And I love that BYU is in, you know, Final Four battles, and you think, they got a shot. It's not just a, you know, before it might've been, well, that guy's LDS. It's the church school. He's got, you know, strong ties to BYU from a family perspective. He knows people from the 80s and 90s. It's just kind of a tip of the cap to BYU. Now this is now legit battles. And I think that's an evolution too in its own right, that BYU has really evolved, because it felt like, you know, 5 years ago, many times BYU was just kind of in the mix, and it never felt like it was tangible. It was real, a much substance. And I think that's what's exciting too about BYU recruiting, is that this program is, I don't know, I don't think it's ever going to be a annual top 25 recruiter, but I've always believed, and I know you do too, it's like this should be a top 40 recruiting program at least. And I think being in the Big 12 and now a 12 team playoff, there is so much to offer, and it's got a fan base with NIL opportunities galore. This place wants to win. You got to get those difference makers. And we've seen even this season with a heralded offensive line, there's still some flaws at times where you're dealing with, you know, run blocking issues and things like that. And you got to get the elite bona fide talents. And I think that Spencer Fano would embody that and would represent that quote bump that some would say BYU doesn't get, but they are. And that 2023 class is definitely shaping up to highlight that bump.
And you would, you know, you have to be professional in the media, so you can't say who says that BYU isn't getting that bump, but damn Kevin Reynolds. Yes, they are. They absolutely are. And Spencer Fano represents that bump. Siale Acero, who just committed a couple weeks ago, represents that bump, right? Smith Snowden is very much in the mix. People don't know this about Smith because he's Will's kid, but I don't think he's LDS. BYU is going toe-to-toe with schools across the country, just like anybody else, right? Like, we think of BYU legacy and BYU legacy kids always go to BYU. That's not the case, especially when those legacy kids aren't LDS. But BYU is still fighting and going toe-to-toe for Smith Snowden, and I like where BYU sits with them.
And I think too, Jeff, that's a great point about Smith. You know, I think what's been amazing about BYU too, under Kalani, and I'm curious to see the shift, the evolution in the Big 12. You know, when he first took the job in 2016, I thought, man, it would be something else if he could kind of have a roster like Utah. And I don't say Utah in the sense of what they do schematically, but like just the overall makeup. I think one of the successful things about Utah football that they've had success with is they get a kind of a 33% white, black, Polynesian. And I think the diversity of the roster is really helping BYU's recruiting efforts too, where it's not like, I mean, 12 years ago when BYU got that 2010 class, it was primarily return missionaries and they were pretty much all white guys. And I just think that having a diversified roster of all different walks of life, and you got a diversified coaching staff too, where it's just like, you don't feel like alone. It feels like BYU football, they have the branding of a program that kind of does things a different way, but at the same time, they feel normal now. It's not like in your face, shoving it down your throat, like this is what we are. Because I've been, you know, pouring over some old sound and old videos. And man, I pulled up the 2005 recruiting class signing day, and it was like, I truly thought, I was listening to Rod Zundel from KSL, the archives. He's like, at a signing day press conference led by Bronco Mendenhall, more like Bishop Mendenhall with all the religious references. But it was like that, that's kind of what it was. And that was, BYU was built to have success in college football. Like they worked for them at that time in the Mountain West and early days of independence, but it turned off a lot of guys that even LDS, like a Spencer Fano, was like, I don't want this in your face type of religion shoved down your throat. Whereas Kalani, I think, just has that perfect blend where it's like, if you are a super religious kid, you can offer that. And Kalani embraces that. He wants you to have the mission and represent the church. But if you're also a guy that isn't about necessarily LDS church or any religion, he just wants you to play ball and show out. And I think that is something that is been fascinating. I think that's why you're seeing, like Dewey Gray even highlighted it in the fall camp, where it's like, this is the most diversified roster I've ever seen at BYU. And I think that helps in recruiting too, where you don't feel completely isolated as a black man to go to BYU or a Polynesian guy. You just like, there's so many of any guys like me around here. It's like, I feel comfortable. I feel at home. I can be myself. And it's a great thing. BYU needs that more than ever in college football to succeed. And I think Kalani has really understood that more than any other coach in the history of this program.
I agree. And I think what's interesting about it, and you can even kind of make the same argument with like the church at large, is it's not so much like LDS doctrine that's in like people's face, right? Like Kalani doesn't shy away from the doctrine of the church or who BYU is, but he does it in a way that it's all about God, right? And it's almost like in general, like God is part of the program. And so what that I think has done is it's opened up the eyes to people who are Christian, but who are not LDS, right? That they can see that, hey, look, we're all still playing for the same guy above, right? And a guy like Landon Chambers, that was a big part of it for him, is that he felt like he could still have his belief system, and it's not going to be, he's not going to be forced to be Mormon. and he could still, you know, be a Christian. So I agree with you. I think it's that diversity is good. That diversity is, I think that the ongoing diversity at Utah, it's interesting you bring that up. It's that segmentation of the roster that they have, like a third, a third, a third, that allows them to continue to get those guys, right? Because Utah has a lot of the same stigma that BYU does outside of the state of Utah. Like in when Utah goes and plays Florida, all they hear are Mormon jokes nonstop, right? Like that's what it is. And what allows them to continue to go into Texas and all of these other places is the fact that they are bigger than just Utah Mormons, right? Like they continue to have that level of diversity. Mitch, this is a discount show here. So we've got the free version of Zoom. I've got to upgrade my account here real fast. So we're going to do that. We can talk about this on this show. These are the kinds of things that on live radio, you can't talk about. But here, the people are choosing to listen to this. For some reason, the people are choosing to listen to us upgrade our account here in real time so that we can have more than 30 minutes to record our podcast.
I love it. I think that's what I always love about the podcasting platform. Sometimes, Jeff, I feel like sometimes I've gotten a little too buttoned up at times. I feel like I need to be a little more loose. I need to be a little bit more myself. Sometimes, like, because there was someone I met a couple months ago and they asked me about the podcast days with, and I just like, you know, I need to sort of just be a little bit less tense all the time and just kind of be loose. And that's why I always enjoy talking with folks like you, because I just feel like we share an incredible passion that goes beyond just the lines of play of BYU. Like we think of things in just a different way, a different line of thought. And that's why these conversations are always just so much fun, because it brings out the passion. And I think that's why Cougar fans, I think sometimes oddly enough, they enjoy our commentary sometimes, because we can connect with them in a way that's just so different than other outlets.
It's true. I mean, it really is a different world. The podcast, I mean, that really was your roots though, right? Like it was,
oh yeah,
it was a Cougar Center in, yeah, Bean's basement. Bean's, yeah, part of the Give 'Em Hell or the Give 'Em Hell Brigham network. We talked to Bean a lot. Well, those were the good old days. Listen, I'm trying to get this upgraded. I don't know how to do it. So when this time runs out, we're gonna have to just like log off, hop back on. I'll send you the invite again. And people, okay, are just going to have to get over it. And I'm going to try to blend the sound together, but also I'm not really going to try that hard to blend the sound together. So if you hear weird interjection in the middle of your show, that's what it is. And I'm sorry about it, everybody, but it's a discount show. You get what you pay for. So we've got approximately 7 minutes, which actually works out about right. 7 minutes. I wanted to talk about a few other games before we get into Utah State, where we'll kind of dig into how bad the Aggies really are. I wanted to talk about some of the other big games. It's kind of the perfect week for BYU to have a Florida game, a Thursday game, because there are so many good games on Saturday that you're not going to want to miss. And so I just want to get like quick, you know, one line takeaways from you on each of these games, big games throughout the week. Tell me what you think is going to happen. We've got number 15, Washington at UCLA. Undefeated UCLA, mind you.
UCLA is going to get the win, even though they're selling their tickets at Costco and all that. I think UCLA pulls the win here. I'm going with the Bruins. I think Kalen DeBoer, a little bit ahead of schedule, but they come down to earth just a tick. I don't think they're completely removed from the stench of Jimmy Lake. I know Penix has been good, but I'm going with the Bruins here.
I think so too. And it really is because I just am not a believer in Michael Penix Jr. But I did see, was it an NIL deal or was it somebody who just had a shirt that had some like get your Penix out or something like that? Like some play on penis. I thought that was funny. Number 7, Kentucky playing Corner Canyon legend. I don't like to call it a Corner Canyon legend. He's a Roy High legend. Jackson, yeah, Dart, number
come
14.
Come on, Jeff.
Ole Miss.
You knew him when he was like in eighth grade.
I know. And it makes me sad that he's in the SEC and not in Provo, because he should be in Provo. But hey, I mean, people got to live their lives, yep, I suppose. What do you think is going to happen there?
I'm going Ole Miss. You know, it's crazy too. I was looking it up. The Kentucky 2010, last time they were in the Grove. Like that's further proof that the SEC needs to go to 9 games, not have divisions. That's just insane. Yeah, that's one of the reasons too, circling back to our early conversation, don't go to 16 teams. Like 14 would be the sweet spot to me for the new Big 12, but I'm going Ole Miss. What about you?
I think Kentucky's going to get it. Ole Miss, that offense, as much as I love my guy Jackson Dart, who's also a friend of the podcast, I just haven't seen it click enough for him. That Kentucky defense is pretty stingy. I like Kentucky in that one on the road. Oregon State at number 12, Utah. I hope I know what you're going to pick, but I mean, I guess I don't know anything. What do you think?
I think Utah wins. Oh! One thing I will say though, day game made me think Oregon State's got a fighting chance.
This is the miss I thought I was getting. It's not about the football. It's about the weirdness of the game. And I'm pretty sure the day games, they're cursed. They can't win in the day.
Yes. You know, Utah, BYU, they don't do well in the day anymore. It's a weird thing, but yeah, like Utah day game, Pac-12 network, that just screams Jonathan Smith special, but I still think Utah probably pulls it out. But I just think Utah's hasn't been tested at all. No. So I don't feel like I know anything about them yet. I don't know if they're even really a team that should be in the top 25 at the moment with how bad Florida's been. I just think that's it's preseason expectation still.
That's kind of my take on it, is that Utah is supposed to be really good. I think that Brant Keithy injury is going to be a really big deal for them. Like he made up like 30% of Cam Rising's targets. Like Dalton Kincaid and Brant Keithy, legitimately were more than 50% of the offense. Like that was who Cam Rising was throwing to. So you take that away. Now Oregon State, who's a pretty damn good defense, they can key in on Kincaid. And all of a sudden these receivers that have just kind of been along for the ride all year are going to have to make plays. I don't know if they can make plays, and I don't know if Cam Rising can make the receivers better than they are. Right. We've seen that from Jaren Hall this year. I love what we've seen from BYU's receivers. I don't know if BYU's receivers are as good as they've played, but I know that Jaren Hall can make anybody look pretty darn good. I don't know if Cam Rising has that ability. So he's going to have to kind of rely on his receivers to do what, you know, their talent is capable of doing. And I don't know what's there. I really don't. So I kind of like the Beavers in this one. Mostly because of the day game, but also like X's and O's. I think this is a tougher matchup for Utah. Utah might be the better team, but Oregon State matches up really well against the U's. Number 2, Alabama. At number 20, Arkansas.
Not going to overthink it, Alabama. Yeah, I think Alabama. I the way Arkansas lost was unfortunate, but yeah, Alabama.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that Arkansas loses this week. I think they lose next week to Mississippi State. They are riding a 3-game losing streak ranked outside of the top 25 by the time they get to Provo. I thought that all year long. It's kind of coming to fruition now. This is maybe my game of the week. Number 9, Oklahoma State at number 16, Baylor. Who you got?
I love this matchup too. And I hope that for the Big 12's sake, it delivers a big TV number like Baylor game did. I think those sort of things matter when you're talking about the extension and getting that lined up with Fox or ESPN. I'm going to go with Baylor. I think that Baylor at home has been an outstanding team. And I think that, you know, Blake Shapen, I understand the criticisms of him. I know he didn't look great against BYU, but I'll tell you, I put him as my preseason first team Big 12 quarterback on my preseason Big 12 poll. I'm very high on him. That's why I was very fearful of that Baylor game in week 2 for BYU. But I love his accuracy, and I feel like Shapen will be the reason Baylor wins this game against Oklahoma State. And it's in Waco on the banks of the Brazos. Give me the Bears.
I like Baylor too, and I also like Shapen. That game against BYU, the way that offense ran in the second half had nothing to, and we said this on the show, I've said this, like BYU fans know this. It had nothing to do with Blake Shapen. It had everything to do with Jeff Grimes. Jeff Grimes has seen the Elisa Tuiaki defense for years, and he knew it didn't happen, but in his mind, he knew eventually they would break and give up the big runs. Fortunately, they didn't, but I think that's what that was all about. It had nothing to do with Blake Shapen. It had everything to do with this defensive line can't possibly hold up for 60 minutes. Let's just keep going. We're going to run out of time before we get to the rest of these games. And because this is a discount show, our Garrett is here. Garrett's he's escalating out of pre-rich and into rich now, folks. And he's the one who brings the VIP membership of Zoom. I don't have it. So we're going to have to cut it off or cut it short. We'll come back in a minute. Think of it like a commercial. Go get a coffee, whatever you do. And we'll be back in a second. All right, we're back. If that felt like a choppy transition, it's because it was. This is Mitch and I were just talking about it. This is his roots a little bit. People don't, when I used to go on Cougar Center, I didn't go on a ton. I don't know, 10 times maybe in total that I was there. I would have to drive from my house. I'm a Davis County guy. I'm up north, like almost Weber County. And I would drive all the way to Sandy. And it was typically like, hey, can you record at like 7 o'clock? I'm like, yeah, sure. There's no traffic. It's 7 o'clock on weeknights. Absolutely, I'll get there. Like, I hope like hell there's not an RSL game that's going to make this even worse. But yeah, sure, I'll be there. And so we'd get there. We'd have to like be in the same room. You had all like the switchboards and all this other stuff. And that was what it took to podcast back in the day. Like you were one of the originals, man.
I know it's crazy. I remember buying a Mackie mixer and investing in some equipment, and it's crazy how much things have changed now. And it's just the convenience of Zoom and everything. It could have been a real game changer back in the day, but yeah, I pride myself on being an early adopter of the podcast scene. It's crazy. I got into my inspiration of podcasting was the, I don't know if you remember this, Jeff. This was like early Bronco 2005. It was the Cougar Daily Download. Do you remember this?
Oh yes.
Yeah. Greg Rebell hosted the Cougar Daily Download.
Yeah.
And, that was kind of like, whoa. Like I remember learning of that and thinking, okay, I'm going to drop $350 on an Apple iPod now, even though I don't know what I'm doing with this XML RSS feed. I'm going to throw it on my computer that's just virused up with LimeWire and Napster tracks. And I'm getting this podcast, whatever this thing is. And that was the inspiration. I'm like, huh, like, I wonder how to do a podcast. And that was kind of the inspiration. And of course, In my procrastinating behavior, it took me 5 years to actually lay down a pod afterwards, but it all worked out.
It did. It all worked out. Now we're here, and the most inconvenient part about it is that we got to stop recording in the middle and because we ran into a time limit. And so things could be worse. So I think we were talking Baylor. I think we both picked Baylor. Yeah, that Baylor game, people were kind of shitting on Blake Shapen, and I just don't get it. Like, I think the guy's fine. I don't know that he's going to be, Tom Brady, but I think he's fine. And he's going to win a lot of games at Baylor. Jeff Grimes, I was sworn to secrecy back in the day, but I think I can talk about this a little more openly now. When Grimes was still in Provo, he used to, like, in order to, like, practice, I think this was mostly like a spring ball thing, not during the season, but in order to get reps against a defensive line that he felt like could actually show what the opponent was going to show in the year, he would take wide receivers off of scout team and say, hey, just play defensive line, because he had that little faith in BYU's actual defensive line. And so, yeah, like to me, that's what this was all about, is he just knew that line would break, and they didn't, and it surprised everybody. So I like Baylor at home in that game as well. Next game, number 22, Wake. This is like the redemption bowl, I guess. Number 22, Wake. Number 23, Florida State. What a weird top 25 matchup of Wake and Florida State. But what do you think?
I'm stunned that Florida State is not one of the teams that's fired their head coach. Florida State's actually competent, and they're looking like they're not bad. Like they're okay. They might be a 8-9 win team this year. I'm kind of stunned, and it's a far cry from the days of when they were just FSU and they were incredible in their heyday of the ACC. But this is the climb back up, and And I think, you know, Florida State's a really good football team. And I think, gosh, Travis, I believe their quarterback, I think is really good. I think that, like, I thought, you know, it just felt like that their quarterback situation at FSU has, ever since, like, it was Chris Ricks who took over, and he felt like a cursed man at FSU. Cause it's like, he parked in a handicap stall, and it was just like, this guy is not good for FSU. And cause every kid, and I bring this all this up because, like, every kid in Utah I swore had like a Florida team. My Florida team was Miami. But I always kind of kept an ear to Florida State because they were the team back then. And you know, so I was always kind of enamored with their mystique, and to kind of see Florida State back and playing in meaningful games again, I think it's pretty cool. But I think they win. I'm going to go with Florida State at Doak Campbell to get that win, because I really like their offense with Travis at quarterback.
I think Wake. It's weird to pick Wake, but I think Sam Hartman's the real deal. And I don't know that Wake is going to be able to stop Florida State, but I think they'll be able to keep up with Florida State. And I trust Sam Hartman to make more plays than I do that Florida State offense. This game, three more games here on my list of games that I'm like pumped for Saturday. I never in a billion years would have expected that I would ask you about Iowa State and Kansas, but we've got to start talking to our kids about undefeated Kansas. We got to start letting everybody know. I think that there needs to be some sort of notification from the Pentagon that they're undefeated. Like, we got to really prepare the country for what the world is going to look like with the Jayhawks undefeated. But here we are. They got another chance against not great, but fine Iowa State team. They, you know, took Baylor to, what was it? It was a one score game, I think, at the end of that one last week. So Iowa State can play. Kansas is trying to sell out their stadium again. That place is kind of bananas when they're good, which is rare, but when they're good, that place is pretty cool. What do you think about this undefeated Kansas team?
I'm going to go with Kansas. You know, I really like Jalen Daniels at QB, and I think that, you know, their wins are actually pretty good. I mean, they're beating Power 5 teams. That's what's crazy about is that I know it's Duke and it's West Virginia and Houston who's going to be a P5, but, like, that's, if BYU won those three games, I think everyone around there would be pretty excited about that too. Like, it's not like they're just beating these scrubs that you usually expect from, you know, Kansas. So I'm going to go with Kansas again. And I'm curious too, Jeff, like, do you think BYU is going to face a Kansas in the Big 12 with Lance Leipold as the coach? Because he's now going to be, it's almost like this is the ultimate coaching national name bowl, where it's like Matt Campbell, Lance Leipold going to be named in every coaching search now, like, just without fail, like someone gets fired. Okay. Matt Campbell, Lance Leipold, they're going to be thrown out as the names to throw in a coaching search. Do you think he stays at Kansas when BYU faces the Jayhawks, whenever that is, 2023, 2024, whatever Kansas lands on the schedule? Do you think BYU is going to face him?
That's a good question. My gut says no. But here's the thing. Kansas doesn't lack for resources. They just haven't been good. And so Kansas probably can fork up the money to keep a guy around if they have any reason to pay, you know, somebody, right? Like, this is the first coach in 15 years that they're actually getting a return on their investment. So I don't think Kansas is hurting for money. They've kept Bill Self all these years, right? And obviously there's a difference between Kansas basketball and Kansas football, but there's not from Kansas athletics. So I think BYU could, or I think Kansas could go and get money to pay Leipold so that BYU does see him. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. The Big 12, that's something that they've had this last year, right? Dave Aranda was in every coaching search. He stuck it out at Baylor. Matt Campbell was thrown out everywhere. He stuck it out at Iowa State of all places. And I happen to know an Iowa State booster who, I think it was the Detroit Lions, offered him that job and he turned it down to stay at Iowa State. So there's something weird. I don't know what it is, but something weird about these Big 12 schools that have these hot coaches and they've been able to keep them. I hope Kansas can do it. I think they'll be able to compete with the funds. I just don't know. Like, can you recruit to Kansas long-term? Is that really where you want to stay? I don't know, but I didn't think Matt Campbell would stick around at Iowa State for very long.
Yeah. And I think it's also a case too of these national media types just can't compute in their head that maybe these coaches want to be at a place where they feel secure and they can build something special. Like, I think Luke Fickell's another name that will always get tossed around for any Big Ten job, yet he's one of the best coaches in college football at Cincinnati. And that's going to be, I believe, a juggernaut in the Big 12. Like, I think Luke Fickell, as long as he's there, Cincinnati's going to be a real force. So yeah, it's, I just feel like it's that, again, that in-between range with the Big 12 where it's like, yeah, they're power conference, but they're not getting the respect because everyone looks at them as a step down. But to me, ton of money. These coaches will make a lot of money in this league. And you can make a nice living in these humble towns of Ames and Lawrence and the kings of those towns if you win. And they will support you. They'll show up. You'll have great game day atmospheres for recruits to come see. Like, I just think there's a lot to like. And I just feel like these coaches, hopefully they just see that and realize, hey, I just stay here at Kansas, because you're right. Like, they've got the money to spend. It's just they haven't had anyone since Mangino that's been – worth the dang. So I think it'll be interesting to see if Leipold does stay. If he does, I think he could build a solid football team, and they might build a statue of the man if he keeps it up.
Well, I mean, he takes them back to a bowl game, and he's going to get a six-year extension and make more money from Kansas, whether he gets fired or not, than he would at his, I don't know, whatever job he's going to go to that's a Minnesota type job. Not that they're going to fire PJ Fleck, but like, that's the kind of job he's going to get. He's not going to go to Ohio State. He's not going to go to USC. So he's going to go to those mid-tier power, like better than Kansas power jobs. And I don't know, is that really better in the long term? I think a lot of people like Scott Frost have maybe learned their lesson that maybe it's not, right? The last two games we got here, I think they're going to be kind of garbage games, but they could impact BYU. So that's why we're going to talk about them real quick, just in terms of rankings. We got number 17, Texas A&M at Mississippi State. Kind of surprised Texas A&M is ranked that high. I get that they beat Arkansas, but you did lose to App at home. That's tough for me to reconcile. If Mississippi State can beat the Aggies, I think BYU should jump them, provided they take care of business tomorrow night. What do you think about this one? Texas A&M headed to Starkville.
I'm going to go with Mississippi State. I thought they were going to be the team that won in Death Valley a few weeks ago against LSU, but had that setback. With Mississippi State, it's always going to be that perennial 7-8 win team, but they're going to get some big win along the way. And I think this is the one. And I think that Texas A&M's fan base just continues to go in disarray with losing this one, even though it's not a bad loss. I don't think any loss in the SEC outside of Auburn is a bad loss this year, or Vandy, but I would say Mississippi State. I'll go with Stark Vegas. What about you?
Yeah, I like that pick a lot. I think if Mississippi State can muster up 20 points, I think they're going to win. I don't think Texas A&M, that offense has been dreadful. Last week against Arkansas, it took that crazy, I guess it's technically a scoop and score, but it was a scoop and score and a pitch halfway down the field. I mean, it was a bananas play for like a 70-yard run back. You take that away and you take a boink off the uprights at the end of regulation, and that game goes the other way.
It's crazy too with A&M. Like, we're guys that watch a ton of college football. Outside of Manziel, I never think of A&M QBs. Like, I can't really name them. Like, there was that one year they had Reggie McNeil in 04.
What's crazy about that, Mitch, right, is they had a guy, Ryan Tannehill, who's taken the Titans to the playoffs every year. You don't even think about Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback because, like, what did he do? Played receiver, for crying out loud.
And they had Kyler Murray for a hot second, and then they who was it? They picked the guy that ended up, I think, transferring as well. He went to SMU. I can't remember his name. Allen? He might end up in the NFL too. But it's like, they just never get the most out of these guys. And that just, it blows me away that A&M just can't get a QB. And that's what I thought Jimbo, with all of the money he's getting, would deliver great quarterback play at a minimum, like at College Station, like at a minimum, they will get great QBs there. But it's like, you look back and you go, it's been 9 years since Jameis at Florida State. Like, what's Jimbo done on the offensive side anymore that makes you think it's going to change, even though they're getting all these amazing recruits? I think they got a 5-star again today that committed to them. It's like, okay, but your offense is never going to amount to anything.
They don't, their offense is the equivalent of BYU's defense, right? It's just like maddening and frustrating, and they still win games somehow. Like at the end of the year, they'll probably be 8-4, 9-3. So like you can't fire anybody for winning nine games, but like, you damn if you're not frustrated throughout the entire season. You watch those A&M games, they don't even put receivers in like motion. So I feel bad for this young quarterback who's there now. It's the backup quarterback. He doesn't even know if he's throwing into a zone or a man. He's just up there hucking it deep and hoping for the best. And Jimbo doesn't care. He's like the equivalent of a tenured professor now with his 40 or with his fully guaranteed contract. He knows that A&M, for as deep as their pockets are, they're not going to pay $85 million to get rid of him. So I think he's just kind of in cruise control right now. And it's a hot mess at College Station, that's for sure. So I like that pick. I think the Bulldogs, I think Mike Leach, I think it gets weird a little bit down there in Stark Vegas, but I do like Mississippi State in that one. The last game, and again, could impact BYU solely in the rankings. It's the other reason we're talking about it. It is technically a top 10 matchup, even though it doesn't feel like it. NC State at Clemson. There are not two top 10 teams that I can think of maybe in the last 10 years of college football that I believe in less than North Carolina State and Clemson this year. What do you think is going to happen in this one?
You know, I love that take because in my sick, twisted mind, I always, you know me being the filthy BYU zoob that I am covering the Cougs. I always try to circle things back to like a tie into BYU beyond just simply the rankings. Like we were talking about Baylor, Oklahoma State, and compare that matchup to NC State and Clemson. Like these are, you know, two kind of showcase games for the new iterations of these leagues moving forward in the, you know, post, you know, power two and then some leagues. Big 12 football is just better. I don't know. Like I just feel like ACC football, there's nothing there that makes me say that that's the third best league. I think even the new Big 12, which is the leftover 12 or whatever you want to call them, is better football matchups, just better games that are consumable for the college football viewer. But yeah, maybe they don't have the cachet like a Clemson, but it's like, I'm with you, NC State and Clemson. I don't trust these teams at all. I don't understand too. I'm trying to always point, cause I feel like whenever there's a team that gets anointed without the clout, like I try to point to the moments that catapulted them. Like last year was North Carolina. It was like, okay, they hired Mac Brown, who's like a media guy. And then they got a great quarterback. And it's like, they were kind of the preseason darling, even though they hadn't done anything. What has NC State done other than being close? And Dave Doran's kind of like a respected coach, but he's like 8-4 all the time. Like, what have they done to earn this clout? Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, maybe I'm basing it too much on logo. But like, you know, Clemson's defense too, like let me down. I thought like, not let me down, but I just thought they were embarrassing last week. I thought that team was going to be in maybe the stratosphere of a Georgia defensively. And they were terrible last week against Wake Forest. They should have lost that game. And DJU is one of the rare five-star quarterbacks where I feel like it's not off the field issues. It's just like, he's probably over evaluated. I don't know. What's the deal there with him?
Yeah.
I'm going to go Clemson, but I don't like the pick at all. I'm just maybe going off of, I trust Clemson more because of history, and I'm not going to ever pick NC State for a big win because they never won one.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think that's the exact take that I've got. I have no idea what NC State has done other than Dave Doran is a guy that people think, yeah, he's an up and comer. I guess he's not a young up and comer, but he's a guy that is on the precipice of reaching that next tier of college football coaches. So I guess that's why they're there, but I think really NC State is kind of a victim, I guess it's more of a benefactor of being ranked in the 20s and then a bunch of teams losing ahead of them. And I was like, well, shit, I guess we better keep moving NC State up. And I think that's what's happened here. This feels a little bit to me like BYU in the WAC, right? Like Clemson and BYU in the WAC, right? BYU, they were never, okay, I mean, I know this is a BYU show. We're going to offend some folks. Throughout the 90s, like BYU was never really that good nationally speaking, right? Like they had their moments, but they were never really like a true national contender. Yeah. But in the WAC, like they always represented something, whether they were up or down, they were the team that people had to go through in the WAC. I think that's Clemson. I don't think Clemson's a real playoff contender. I don't think they're the fifth best team in the country, But until somebody in the ACC can definitively knock Clemson off their pedestal, everything runs through Clemson right now. And that's where I'm at. So I'd like Dabo to win this game. I think it'll be ugly. I don't trust DJU one bit. Like, he looked great last week. He looked terrible in the 13 games before that. So I don't trust DJU, but I don't know anything about NC State. And candidly, I don't know that I've even watched NC State play, because why would I ever turn on an NC State game, right?
I know, it's crazy. And man, it's just like, it's blows me away how they've just been kind of anointed. Like, I feel like, you know, circling it back with BYU, we're kind of lucky, you know, following a team like BYU, because I just feel like BYU provides entertaining games. Yeah. And that, it's a byproduct of independence too, where you've had a lot of novelty. You go to parts of the country where you're not typically there. And that's always kind of intriguing from a viewership standpoint, but it's like, they just always have a knack for some crazy thing, or Cosmo's gonna, you know, blow a have a tiki torch flamethrower. I don't know, but there's just always some like sideshow antic, and maybe it gets amplified on social media, but BYU finds a way to get some sort of week where they are like the thing. And yeah. NC State never does, like, outside of the year in 1999 when they had Norm Chow and I was interested then, and they had Chuck Amato and those like yellow tinted glasses and T.A. McClendon and Philip Rivers. I don't know anything about NC State football that's like, what have they done that says they're a top 10 team? And I'm sure as heck not going to trust a team that I can't really register any memories on or anything about to take down Clemson, even though Clemson drives me insane how Dabo approaches constructing rosters now in college football. Like, dude, embrace the portal. Are you insane? How he doesn't do that, but that's a whole other topic. But I just think that I'm gonna go with Clemson. Like, they're probably gonna pull off some late heroic thing. I'm expecting some rain. I'm expecting some Death Valley storming of the field. Like, that's just every time I see Clemson in a big top 10 game, that's what they do.
That's exactly what they do. And until you said Philip Rivers, I totally forgot he even went to NC State. I was trying to think of NC State players that I knew. I was thinking Jawan Dixon, but I think he was a Maryland basketball player.
and Russell Wilson for a hot second. I knew more about Russell Wilson at NC State when he was at Wisconsin. That's what I learned of Russell Wilson at NC State.
Yeah, I was just trying. I was trying to comb through any like ACC football memories I had, and all I could come up with was Maryland basketball. That's how much I think of NC State football.
That's just crazy.
We've talked a ton about non-Utah State BYU things, because candidly, this is going to be the quickest preview you've done all year. I'm trying to come up with some interesting anecdotes to talk about that aren't just like, hey, the schedule or the schedules in the future don't include this game. Like, that's the most interesting thing about this game, is that the teams aren't going to play anymore after this year. There's just not much to talk about. But Adam Gibby, who took over Lawless Republic, our baby, Mitch, Lawless Republic. I would give Adam Gibby $1 million if he could tell us why Lawless Republic is called Lawless Republic. But like, hey, like, all the kudos in the world for you, Adam, for keeping it going. He came up with a really fascinating stat this week, and it got posted onto Reddit. That's where I saw it. And so I'm going to read it verbatim here. BYU has played Utah State 9 times since 2012 and had a QB injured to leave the game in 6 of those games. They have played 127 total games since 2012, and the other 106 games, BYU's only had 4 quarterbacks get hurt. But against Utah State, it's 66%, Mitch. Like, for you math wizards out there, 6 times out of 9 games, a quarterback has left the game with an injury. What the hell is going on with the Aggies? Is this intentional?
This is some voodoo magic. I mean, Greg Rubel would probably say, you know, that's a trend. I'm monitoring those trends, and that's something of note. 66% of the time, that's a trend over the course of a decade. I would say, yeah, it's wild to think, and you even go further back. Like 2010, that was also a moment where there was a benching. Like, there's always some quarterback story in BYU, Utah State. Well, actually, excuse me, that was 2011 with Jake Heaps and Riley Nelson. There's always some antic with the QBs in this game. And even last year, both teams, I think Logan Bonner got hurt in the BYU Utah State game. Of course, Baylor got hurt. Baylor came out looking like a guy, like he comes back on the field. I'm like, did he go blind or is he in concussion protocol? Like how he's walking out with just like these big black sunglasses on. It's like, is he got a walking cane all of a sudden?
He did. He looked a little,
and he had the earplugs in and yeah. So we knew it was all concussion protocol, but yeah, it's crazy to think of this game and all the quarterback issues. I almost think it's because of the dumb play call by Brandon Doman in 2012. It's still like punishment for how stupid that was to try to run something with Taysom Hill mm-hmm. and late in the game when the game was in the bag. It's 6-3, but like Taysom gets hurt on that play. I can't remember exactly the context of it again, but it's crazy how since that moment. This has just been the game that always creates some sort of injury, even on the Utah State side.
Right. And you hope that it doesn't happen this week because I honestly think that like BYU could run Wildcat most of this game and probably win the game. Utah State has been that bad, especially on defense. Yep. And so you hope that Jaren Hall doesn't pick up some crazy injury. And I agree with fake Greg Rebel. It is a trend. And I don't, you know, it spans three coaching staffs at Utah State. This clearly isn't intentional, but like maybe it's intentional when it happens this frequently. It's weird, if nothing else. Here's my pregame notes for this game. I came up with all of the detailed notes that I have. I will read them to everybody for everybody to know. Logan Bonner has been very bad. The Aggie run defense has been very bad. The Aggie coaching has been very bad. And the Aggie student section evidently has been very bad. And that's why Blake Anderson has been yelling at the Utah State Aggies, telling them, hey, now you respect my players. They're good. It's the same team that was good a year ago. They're still good now. Everything's been bad in Logan. Nothing has gone right. That team is very bad. Like, what do you make of this?
It's unreal to think you.
Yeah. What do you think of this game going into
it? It's crazy to think how bad they've gotten.
Yeah, like it really is. It happened so fast. And I don't know if I understand why. I know they lost a lot of those playmakers on the, you know, they lost some running backs, they lost some wide receivers, and they lost a bunch of that offensive line. But it wasn't like they were playing with the same starting 11 all year last year. They went through some injuries. Cooper Lagah comes in the bowl game. I think Cooper Lagah, I don't know how you haven't pulled Logan Bonner. He's got something like 9 interceptions. And with what you saw from Lagah, he's got to be better than what you're getting from Bonner. But I still, even with all of the injuries, all of the lack of experience, I don't know what Utah State is doing that is making them so bad this year. It makes no sense to me.
It's crazy, Jeff. You know, because I thought Utah State would still be, you know, a 6-6, 7-5 team this year. And when week zero came around and they are in a tough one with UConn, I thought more, oh, UConn's mm-hmm. seen an uptick. You know, Jim Mora's got things right with UConn. No, it was more Utah State is UConn's equal this year. They barely pulled it out against the Huskies. Yeah, Utah State's a mess. And it's honestly kind of crazy that I'm curious to see what happens with Blake Anderson the rest of the year because – you know, John Hartwell is the name that's their AD at Utah State. He's getting thrown around by the likes of Pete Thamel in AD searches. If John Hartwell goes, Blake Anderson, you now have a history of where you were caught saying something about kind of shaming victims. He survived that still because, quite frankly, he won and they gave him an extension. And then two, you're now putting the fans on blast. It's just, and you're not a homegrown guy. Like that's just not a recipe to endear yourself to a program, even though you did win, like in put together a historic season for the Aggies. That's kind of what I'm curious to see what happens with Utah State moving forward with what happens maybe with Blake Anderson, because you would typically think he's built up a kind of a mulligan year, if you will, this year to like, hey, it happens, but these certain quirks amplify a seat. We see that often in college football. And if his AD possibly goes, could get really interesting. But this is a game where if they're going to ever put out something, it could be against BYU. But I think BYU gets off to a quick start. That's going to be a big focus, I think, for this BYU team after what happened last week against Wyoming. I think BYU honestly is in cruise control, and knock on wood, Jeff, that Jaren Hall, nothing voodoo happens to him. Get him out as soon as possible, get a big lead and get that man out of the game. Yeah. And let's get a real look at Jacob Conover as the second string QB.
That's exactly what I would do. And I agree with you. I don't know how long Blake Anderson survives. I think the biggest weird thing that happened to him is the guy that probably should have got that job was Jay Hill at Weber State. And Weber goes into Logan and boat races the Aggies. And now you look forward, fire Blake Anderson. Let's just pretend that happens. I don't know that Jay Hill takes that job. Why would you? That's a program in disarray. The Mountain West is clearly not what the Mountain West was. I mean, look at it now. I was looking at it and saying, okay, Utah State, you know, they're popping up at like bottom 25 rankings right now. And it's like, well, yeah, they're a mess. They've got to be towards the bottom of their division. But like Boise State isn't exactly Boise State right now. And Colorado State is somehow worse than Utah State. Like the whole Mountain West Conference is a mess. Why would Jay Hill take that job at this point? He's been passed over once. You know, I don't think I'd take that job if I was Jay Hill. And if that happens, man, like, I don't know where Logan turns at that point. It gets really ugly. And this game, I think, could get really ugly really quickly too. Kind of just be foreshadowing. Yeah.
I agree. And I think the only way that maybe Jay Hill would want to go to Utah State is that you could take a program, and if you can somehow win that league like Blake Anderson did, you might have a chance at the 12-team playoff. Maybe you can be that 16th. That's the only thing. But I think the group of five best league is now going to be the Sun Belt. And I think that's going to be the top of the line league in the group of five. It is crazy to think how far the Mount West was falling. I saw someone, I can't remember who it was, that tweeted it out. Like, it was a question of, could Wyoming, this was on the heels of the BYU game, could they win the Mountain West Mountain Division? I'm like, no, like Wyoming was an okay team, but come on, like, they're not going to win. And then you look at, size it up and go, my gosh, they could win that. Like, even though they're a one-dimensional football team and Peasley is not good, they could seriously win that division, maybe win that league with how bad it is.
Yeah, they really could. This game, I hope, gets out of control. It's only a 25 or 24 point spread now, which is a little interesting to me. But I guess if you really think about it, 24 is a lot of points. And Kalani's never been the guy that's going to run it up and score 60. I think Vegas has figured that out. So if this game ends up in the 45 to 13 range, I mean, that's probably where I would expect it to be. That really is what I see happening. I can't talk about Utah State without at least, making fun of Utah State a little bit. And I wrote a newsletter earlier this week where I was really open and honest with my feelings about Utah State. And I just want to read some of the fast facts to you. In the closing minutes of this show, Mitch, the fast facts from my newsletter. Subscribe to the newsletter at givemhellbrigham.com. It's a freemium model. There's a free newsletter and a premium newsletter. You get different stuff with both. Check us out, givemhellbrigham.com. Here were the fast facts that I have this week about Utah State. Brigham Young is quite literally the reason that Logan exists. In 1859, Young sent settlers to Cache Valley to build a fort on the Logan River. Among those folks was a fur trapper named Ephraim Logan, who became the namesake of the town. 20 years later, 1878, Brigham Young College is formed in Logan. Wasn't until it was a land-grant school later on that it was renamed Utah State. So truthfully, without BYU, without Brigham Young, Cache Valley, Utah State, Logan does not exist. Second point is a lot like this one. So I merge these two together. I just can't not read the quote verbatim from the article that I got these facts from. It says the second point is basically the same as the first. Here's the quote. The first higher education came to Cache Valley when Brigham Young College was founded. So up until BYU got to Cache Valley, it was just a bunch of dumbass morons wandering around Cache Valley. No education was there until Brigham Young got there. So fast fact number
incredible.
Two. Fast fact number three. This is according to ilovehistory.utah.gov. So that .gov, for those of you who aren't real wizards on how the internet works, that means this is the government website, folks. This is a fact from the state of Utah. They are listing the most interesting things about Utah State they could think of. This is one of them. Old Ephraim was a giant, now dead, grizzly bear who had three toes on one foot. Mitch, he died in 1923. That's 99 years that Logan has had to come up with a better fact for the government to put on their website, and they haven't been able to do it. The dead bear with three toes has been one of the most interesting things about that town for 100 years. I mean, what do you say to that?
That is incredible. And just you say they have not updated their website in 100 years. I love that line.
Oh, fast fact number four. This is a shout out to our guy, Boney Fuller. We've all seen the video of We Are Farmers in the student section. I didn't know this. They really were the farmers before the Aggies were the Aggies. They were the Utah State University farmers. They really were farmers. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. Number five, and I didn't know this, and I'm a Cache Valley guy. I was born in Logan. My family still lives in Logan. There was a friendship. In fact, the pamphlet says half a century of friendship and a decade of contracts between Utah State University and Iran, the country of Iran. Utah State is digging so deep for friends that they had to turn to Iran to be their friend. It doesn't get lower than that.
That is incredible. These facts, I did not know. I was expecting, you know, like I've heard these. These are all brand new to me. This adds so much to this game. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, give you something to talk about in your pregame show tomorrow. I don't know if you remember this. This was a few years ago. There was an advertisement from Utah State for some football after party that was featuring DJ Wayne. They just stole LaVell Edwards Stadium for the poster.
When I was reading your newsletter, this was an amazing pull. An amazing pull. I love that.
The background, if you haven't seen it, check it out, givemelbrigham.com. The background of this poster that I can only assume is hanging up all over campus is LaVell Edwards Stadium. It's not even Maverick Stadium. Okay, fast back number six. Mark Hoffman went to Utah State. And honestly, I've been a Mormon for my whole life. I didn't even know who Mark Hoffman was. Netflix puts out Murder Among the Mormons, and now I learn he's a Utah State guy. So if you're keeping score at home, folks, Ted Bundy went to Utah, and Mark Hoffman went to Utah State. I mean, I don't know what else there is to say.
Well said. That's a mic drop if I've ever heard one.
I got two more facts real quick in the last minutes of the show here. They have a manure law in Logan. It's unlawful for any person to throw, cast, or put into, drop, and leave in any street or public place within the city limits of Logan any stones, gravel, dirt, manure, or garbage, and allow the same to drop off of your truck. Da 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 da. So, like, they really have to spell out, hey, guys, please no manure in the streets. Like, please, just keep your manure where manure goes, not in our roads. And then the last fast fact. They hired Gary Anderson after the Oregon State cheerleaders. They still hired Gary Anderson. I don't know where you go from there if you're Utah State. I mean, that's bad. I guess you go to Iran to find your next head coach. I don't know where you go.
Jeff, those were amazing.
Oh, amazing, that's it. Facts. That's how I feel about this game. I made my final score prediction after a series of pictures of cows that have their heads stuck in stuff. My very serious score prediction is BYU 98 and Utah State's just pumped that gas prices have gone down a little bit, so their bus ride's not quite as expensive as it would have been. That's it. That's how this game goes. Mitch, man, it's been a blast having you on the show. Even though we had to do two shows, kind of, it's been a blast having you here. Appreciate you hopping on with us.
I always enjoy it, Jeff. This is the best, man.
Awesome, man. All right. Well, Mitch, until next time, give them hell and go Cougs.